Hi, welcome to Mind Matters, the podcast where we talk about trends, what's going on in our world in regards to mental health and substance use. My name is Wendy McCarty Van Bemmel. I'm your host. To my right, I have Gabe Fernandez, who's a community outreach liaison. And we also have Dwight Bain, who tell us a little bit about your story, Dwight, and who you are.
I am so honored to be here and to be part of a conversation because Orlando is my hometown. I was one of those people lucky enough, blessed enough to have teenage parents who ran away to Orlando. And my parents were my heroes because I grew up here. And because I grew up here, and here's how it ties in, I knew when I was a kid that I wanted to be a Christian psychologist on the radio helping people because my parents, even though they didn't have the benefit of high school, they had the benefit of going to the library every single week, and I would check out the maximum number of books you could check out, which was 16. What a silly number. Who only reads 16 books a week? Come on. You know, get a life. And every day they listened to Clyde Naramore on Christian Broadcasting, and early in my career I had a chance to interview him. He was just every day, he was an educator, you know, EDD, so educational doctorate, and he educated people about psychology, behavioral management, parenting, and he had was on twice a day. So my entire childhood, I'm listening to someone, and I thought, that's it. I know what career path. And then, because of growing up in Orlando, Orlando has constantly changed.
Yes.
It was a tiny town then.
Yes.
And now it's the 17th largest media market in the United States. So the reason that I teach on change, the reason that I talk about change, I write about change, is because I've lived change. And if you know how to change well, you'll live well.
You mentioned something, and I'm gonna just gonna dive right in here.
Go.
Curiosity. You had that since a child, just from listening to you talk a little bit about that. I feel like curiosity is such a big part of navigating change and kind of taking a hold of the reins of change, because change can be tough.
Change is terrifying, right? You know, life is change, and change is stressful. But when you know how to manage that stress, you navigate the stress, and you get stronger. You become more resilient. But that's exactly right, Wendy, because curiosity, when I feel stressed, the amygdala, think of it like the smoke alarm in the brain. You know, Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote the book, The Body Keeps the Score.
Oh, great book.
Great book.
Say it again so everybody can write that down.
The Body Keeps the Score, Bessel van der Kolk. And what he taught me was, and I never thought of it this way before, he said, Dwight, the amygdala is your brain's smoke alarm. Like those industrial strength smoke alarms that are so loud.
You can't ignore it.
You have to run. So what happens when I can nostril breathe? James Nestor, in a book called Breath, nostril breathe, so you can calm down that amygdala, and here's what happens. It's so exciting. Now the part of your brain that can get curious instead of furious. When you think about the reason that we talk about Walt Disney and Walt Disney World here in Orlando, and really the reason why Orlando grew so much was that theme park, but Walt Disney's parents got married in Mount Dora, Florida. The first couple to get married in Lake County were Elias and Flora Disney.
Really?
That's a little fun fact.
Fun fact. And so Walt's mom's sisters would send him art supplies, even though they lived in the Midwest in Marceline, Missouri. And Main Street USA looks like Marceline when he was a very small child. Walt was born in Chicago and his dad was working construction. But his parents married here, and his aunts, one became a teacher, one became the first school principal, female school principal in Lake County, Florida, right here in Central Florida, where I live. And they would send art supplies to little Walt, because when you're in a very harsh environment, and sometimes he was, if you know how to turn off the smoke alarm, now your brain can get creative.
Yeah.
So what happens with change, stress, pressure? And for some people, that change and pressure is something in a relationship. Maybe it's something in their career, something financial. Maybe it's a health. When I can turn off the smoke alarm, when I can turn off the fear, the doubt, the insecurity, the creative side, the idea side, and that's the path toward great potential.
Oh, I love that so much. Tell us about, I'm curious, Gabe, a time, since we're talking about change today and it can be scary, when's the time, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here, when you were really courageous?
Really courageous. I would have to say, I think you got it a little bit into your origin story of how you got called into mental health. I'll tell you a little bit about my background in my former life. I used to be a bouncer and a bodyguard.
I did not know this, yeah. And I can totally see it.
Yeah. So someone at one of the places I worked offered me a chance to work at a group home. They said, you're perfect, you're tolerant, you're patient, you're a role model.
I love that so much. And at the time,
I had a fork in the road because I was getting offered gigs to bodyguard, you know, famous celebrities. You know, for a good salary.
Yeah.
And then here I had this offer for to work at a group home for probably like $8 or $9 an hour.
Yeah.
They said, it's 10 teenage boys. You're going to teach them how to tie ties, how to apply for jobs, how to, you know, work.
It's wonderful, Gabe. And life skills.
So yeah. I hit that fork in the road.
Yeah.
I applied.
That's scary. That must have been a scary decision. It was scary.
And fell in love with it. And from then on, I knew this was my path, my calling.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And once you know the path and you're able to be on path of this is going to help people, then it kind of blocks out all the other distractions. And you're able to just move forward and have a great sense of peace.
Yeah.
So even moving forward and changing, you knew it was the right thing to do. I love that story. I love knowing that part. Something I've learned is that until you know somebody's backstory, you don't know the real story. And when you know the real story, you can change the rest of the story.
Yes. Yes.
And I love knowing that backstory.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a calling. I think to work this field, mental health, everyone's answering a calling, I think.
I agree. And I think for some people, it's so difficult when you think about change and you're very comfortable where you're at, but there's that little piece inside of you that it's kind of like calling you into the wilderness, you know, like this is where you got to be, got to do it to get where you want. But no, I'm so comfortable. I could just put up with what I'm doing. I think people are caught in that spot. Yeah. And maybe you're listening right now and you're caught in that spot. What would you tell someone who's sitting in that spot right now?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because there's no growth in the comfort zone. Mm. And there's no comfort in the growth zone.
You're right.
So when somebody says, and for me, I knew I wanted to be a counselor. There was a whole path. And then in college, you know how things kind of get sideways sometimes and had a degree. I could get a job as a teacher. I needed a job. And so I took the job. And thought, oh, I'll just settle for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then because teachers have these things called after school meetings and teachers meetings. And I just thought, well, that's dumb. So I didn't do any of them. I just taught kids. I love kids. But all the other administrative stuff, it's like, I don't have time for that.
Sure.
And I got fired. One of two jobs I've ever been fired from. And I got fired for a good reason. I didn't go to teachers meetings. And they said, and I've been warned bunches of times. And I just thought it was a waste of time. And I got fired. And so now sitting fired, my cousin who was a pastor said, we're taking a choir to Jerusalem in Israel for the Garden Tomb to sing on Easter sunrise service morning. You're loud. I know you don't have a job. We need people who are loud to carry television equipment. And so I went to Jerusalem in Israel on Easter that year and didn't know anybody but my cousin. He was busy a lot. And I sat and made some decisions. The girl I'd been dating, I'm going to come home and put a ring on her finger, right? Mm. That great philosopher, Beyonce, you know, if I could put a ring on it. Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm going to go to graduate school, right? No growth in the comfort zone. And I was comfortable. I loved teaching kids, but that wasn't where I was supposed to be. And so I didn't have scholarships. I got barely into graduate school because of grades. And it was hard. It was challenging. And it took a lot of remembering, where am I headed? I knew I was going to come back to Orlando. And being able to have that vision is what helped me when I had no groceries.
Yeah.
Or when I was able to think, how am I going to pay my tuition this year? Because back then, you couldn't do student loans.
Yeah. I think that's what holds people back, too, is I have bills to pay. I have kids to provide for. You know, a lot of times, those very real life circumstances are what...
Sure.
And then also we're creatures of habit, right?
Oh, so, that's so true,
so
too.
So a lot of times it's, kind of just breaking that pattern of being familiar, what you know.
Yeah.
So how can someone move past that.
I'm glad you said that, and I'm glad you said habit, Gabe. James Clear, who was a college athlete, got injured. He wrote a book called The Power of Habit. And when you look at habits, tiny habits, and when I say tiny habits, I mean tiny habits. Get up on the first alarm. Make your bed. The research shows the more I'm able to, in the morning, first thing, do tiny things, it makes it easier to do big things all day long. So if you have to sit 17, you know, snooze alarms, then you've started your day with barriers. And when I'm able to say, you know what, I'm going to break everything down into a tiny habit that I can be repetitive about. One writer calls it small, simple steps.
Yeah.
S, you know, cubed. Yeah. Small, simple steps. So if somebody says, I want to, you know, work on education, work on reading, work on learning, work on my relationship, you know, what are we gonna do for a relationship? We're gonna save all of our money. We're gonna go on this fabulous trip. No, why don't you just sit down and have a meal together and turn off your phones and talk to each other? The smaller you can make the behavioral step, the easier it is to repeat it tomorrow. And then this builds on top of this, builds on top of this. And pretty soon now you're gonna start to realize your potential. And you'll get a little bit of traction. You don't, you know, you buy the gym membership, you go one time, you say, I didn't lose any weight, I'm not going to go to the gym. No, it's actually going every day that makes the difference.
I think part of that,
The small goals lead to big goals. And
I think it's partly believing in yourself too, know? Like the more little things you do, you start to be like, I can do this, I think I got this.
Right, to have that sense of worth.
And hopefulness too.
Sometimes we forget, you know, because when you've gone through emotional healing, you know, or like me, gone to a lot of 12-step. Hi, my name's Dwight. I have issues, right? When you're able to say, I know this about me and I know what's going to help me heal, sometimes it's easy to forget the person who hasn't started that self-awareness journey.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Because maybe no one in their family tree ever worked on themselves. Nobody really made it okay to be okay. Everybody repeats the same generational pain, the same generational process.
I could never do that. That's not me. There's no way I could become what you're doing.
Right. And so to be able to tell someone, you know, let's take a nostril breath, calm down that amygdala, and give people hope. I'm a person of faith, and there's a great verse in the Bible that says, now these three remain, faith and hope and love. And the greatest is love, but the second greatest is hope. And I think sometimes that's what we do, is to give people hope. You can change. You don't have to stay in a bad relationship.
Yes.
You don't have to stay trapped in your past. You don't have to live underneath the shame of what's happened. You can be set free, but being able to face it and have that sense of worth, right? I believe that we help people find their voice, and then they can make a choice to live better and to live healthier.
So, one thing that I heard someone say was, in this resonated, stayed with me for a really long time, and it still does, is that, you know, we think of, or I thought of hope as an emotion, a feeling, but it's more of a cognitive thinking process that anyone can learn.
Dr. Martin Seligman at the University of Pennsylvania has written extensively about that. And so when we think, well, it's just a feeling. No, it's a powerful force. He calls it the power of optimism.
Yes.
So he's the psychologist who came up with the term learned helplessness.
Okay.
Well, guess what? You can also learn hopefulness. Notice the key theme is learn, right? So if I grow up in an environment, I'm just a little kid, I only know what I know. Everybody here is negative, everybody's hateful, everybody's critical, they attack each other, they say bad things, they do bad things, and so that's, I know what I know. ACEs score. If your listeners haven't taken an ACEs test, it takes a couple of minutes from the Kaiser Foundation.
Can you get that online?
Yeah, it's online. Okay. Only 10 questions, and it's about childhood abuse, childhood trauma.
And so ACE
score.
Okay.
Adverse childhood experiences.
Got it.
Right? And that would be a great maybe link to put in the show notes somewhere. But adverse childhood experiences will determine how much pain, trauma you're going to have in your adult life.
Okay.
So if you have four or more, then I can tell you when you walk into a bar in college as a sophomore, you're going to pick somebody who looks a whole lot like your family tree. Ooh. Because you're going to repeat generational pain. The epigenetics will line up because your brain says, oh, who are the healthy people? Yeah, I don't know anything about that. I'm going to go over here with the really unhealthy people that might take advantage of me. And you think, why does she keep going to the bad boys? Why does he keep going to these high drama girls? Because it's what their brain says from their ACEs score.
It's familiar.
Right. It's what they know.
Yeah.
So if you've grown up on, you know, on chicken nuggets, you've grown up on junk food, and somebody says, "Oh, look, broccoli," you're gonna go, "No." If you've grown up like you have done with your son and being able to say, "Oh, look, here's healthy food," your body will be healthy. It'll respond. So then all of a sudden to be able to go, why would you eat a Twinkie that says the expiration date was 1999?
Yeah.
Junk food does not fuel our brains. Dr. Mark Hyman has a podcast called The Doctor's Pharmacy with an F, because he said food is your medicine. If you can get healthy food, clean water, when you're able to just do that one small thing.
Yeah.
Because everybody in America says, "Oh, I got to lose weight. I've got to get in shape." Well, technically round is a shape, but come on. When I start to look at food and small changes in food and what happens, for me, I lost 50 pounds.
Yeah. You feel good. It changes your outlook.
It changes everything, mm-hmm. but it was nothing big.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to walk, and I walk at least a mile, sometimes 3-4 miles every day. Gives me a chance to think and to pray and to listen to podcasts like this.
Yeah.
And then to be able to know the Twinkie expiration date, 1999, I am embarrassed to tell you, I've eaten way more of the share of Twinkies in my lifetime. But I started looking at, you know, like what we would call convenience store food that has long expiration dates. Well, the longer the expiration date on the shelf, usually the shorter the expiration date for you.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it.
All those preservatives?
Yeah. Yeah,
not what's helping. In that you can't pronounce? Come on. Mm-hmm. And being able to go to the farmer's market and just such small things. It's almost silly that those small, tiny changes get dramatic results in long-term health.
So what are some of these small changes that someone can make that they might be stuck in that pattern now?
That's a great question, Gabe. So we're going to think across different zones. Small change. Number one change, every expert agrees, that you can make for your brain health, for your physical health, is sleep.
Mm.
Yeah.
Americans are chronically sleep deprived.
We work in hospital systems, and that we see that all the time. Someone coming in who's either suicidal or in a really acute state, they need to sleep. Their body needs to sleep.
That's a big indicator, too, of how well someone's doing, right?
Yeah.
If they're not sleeping
well. Huge. So when you know, therapists can sometimes do that, and being able to say, you know, because it's a non-threatening question, and I found working with a lot of different companies, you know, speaking to corporate groups, everybody will tell you the truth about their sleep pattern. If I ask them how they're doing, they're going to say fine, just fine, which means I don't want to think about it. I don't want to talk about it. I'm afraid. I'm ashamed to have emotion. Could mean a lot of things. So you ask about emotions, you may not get a straight answer. You ask about sleep. I've rarely had somebody lie about sleep. Oh, my sleep is fantastic. Thank you for asking.
There's no stigma attached.
That's it. That's it. There's no stigma. Yeah. And there's stigma
on
mental health.
How interesting, right?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're allowed to talk about that, but that would be your number one. What can people do for change? And when we think about aggressively working on sleep hygiene and being able to say, I deserve to have a good night of sleep. Well, but what about the kids? What about the dog? Getting everybody on some sleep patterns. So if there's one thing a person could do to create dramatic change, there's your one thing. If somebody says, well, I want to do more than one thing. All right. So that's physical. We talked about clean food, mm-hmm. you know, exercise, motion. Okay. Look at the word emotion. Take off the E.
Right.
Yeah.
So when we have motion, I've met a lot of people, including me. I don't want to go to the gym. I don't want to work out. I don't want to go to the Y. I don't think I've ever met anybody that was unhappy they exercised that day. They go home energized. Yeah. They go home feeling better. And sometimes it's a choice to say, I'm going to get myself up, or I'm going to set an appointment to meet somebody at the Y. That works. Right? Mm-hmm. So physical. And then when we look at emotional, having that sense of self-awareness, what some people call EQ, emotional intelligence, because self-aware is very rare. Mm-hmm. And emotionally being able to say, what can I do in my emotional state, my mental state, my psychological state? And the number one thing I want people to do in that zone is journaling. Mm. When an individual practices something called gratitude journaling, writing down three things they're thankful for, part of sleep hygiene, about a half an hour before bedtime when we turn off the screens, turn off the blue light, and I write down three things I'm thankful for. Within a month, they'll be 10% happier. Within a month, they will have eaten 24% less junk calories, because the more you have a sense of gratitude and wellness, you look at the convenience store junk food and you go, why would I eat something that has an expiration date for 15 years from now?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
What's in it? Because when you feel better about you, you take better care of you.
Yeah, that's so true.
Right? And it's pretty amazing. So depression goes down, wellness goes up because of gratitude. And then there's another piece to it, and it's relational. And the relational part is having, you know, conversations like this with friends like this. And because I'm a person of faith, I would say, always look at spiritual. This would be meditation. You know, for me, it's my faith. But for other people, they say, well, I'm not really religious. And I'll say, oh, that's okay. Get out of nature. Gabe, you and I were talking about kayaking. One of my most spiritual experiences in life was kayaking at a place called the Itchinatuckney River up in North Florida above High Springs. And it was a super cold day. I was with a friend who was way ahead of me. It was raining. It was right above freezing. I mean, it was cold. Ooh. And there was this misty fog. And I just remember thinking, this is maybe one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. There's nobody here. I mean, even the river otters were like, it's cold today. We're going to, you know, they kind of snuggle down. And being out in nature was so powerful, so peaceful. And it gave me this deep sense of spiritual connection.
Yeah. I'm similar in the fact that when I go kayaking, I just come back recharged.
Oh, yeah.
And it's connecting with nature. It's no phones. It's no music. It's just, you know, being one with nature.
That's exactly it. And then when you add in going with a friend, and then we add in, let's make sure we turn off screens and get some sleep. And let's talk about how thankful we are, how grateful we are, how much we appreciate. Because when you're busy counting blessings, you don't have time to count problems.
I'll tell you one thing that I do personally. Sure. And when you said this, it reminded me of when I'm going through a really tough time, the thing that I do is I got to come up with three things that are either going well or I can be thankful for. But as long as I can come up with three things, I'm going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, and it just kind of tricks your mind.
Well, it's a mindset. It really is. Some people call it a brain hack. And so it's a brain hack because now we're going over to the other side of your brain.
Yeah, you're so like, oh, now
I'm looking for options. It's something I taught my kids when they went away to college. Have you ever heard of the Yahoo principle?
No, but please tell us.
All right, so here you go. Not the search engine, even though I like Yahoo.com. That's still a thing. So when you look at Y-A-H-O-O, you always have options and opportunities.
Oh, I love that.
Y-A-H-O-O. So when somebody feels stuck, Wendy, they can Yahoo it. You always have options, opportunities. So I want to list my options, right? Flat tire. I can get mad. I can blame somebody. You know, I like things with, you know, letters or things. And so if people go to the ABCs, they're not going to get that creativity. The A would be argue. The B would be blame. The C would be criticized. Because I'm going to argue, I'm going to blame, I'm going to criticize. That person doesn't want to grow. That person is stuck, and that person's not going to change.
And your tire's still flat.
Your tire's still flat. Really good observation. And nobody wants to hang out with a negative person who's just criticizing and complaining. But somebody who says, hey, I'm stuck. Can you help? And so I walk through my options. Mm-hmm. And one of those options is I always have the choice to choose my attitude.
And I've actually practiced that myself. I don't know if you remember the old I-4-408. That exchange.
Yes,
I would back
that
up for miles.
So yes. Long. Yes. It was like so over
would,
a mile.
Over a mile. And that's I would get imprinted. Frustrated. Yeah. I would get so frustrated, you know, not even road rage, but it'd be frustrating. And I remember sitting there like being angry at whoever designed that. But I remember thinking, where am I? I'm in my car. I have my own car. I remember when I didn't have a car.
Yeah.
Right.
There's gas in the car. Yes.
There's gas in the car.
You got air in the car.
I'm leaving a job.
You have a job.
That's helped me. And then once I shift that perspective, that tension started leaving.
Yeah. Right.
And then I'm grateful. So just kind of shifting that perspective.
Yeah. When somebody takes the micro view, my world, my problems, and here's what I want. I would call this expectation. Here's what I want my world to be today. And that person frequently is unhappy. But when you can dial it back, there's 8 billion people on the planet. And when I can dial it back to say, you know what? Some people don't have a job. Some people don't have a car. Some people have broken air. For over, almost 2 years, I had a broken air conditioner because I didn't have the money to fix it. And every time I get in the car and I turn on the air, it's like, God, thank you.
Yeah.
I have air conditioning that works. We live in Florida. That's a big deal. Yeah. And being able to know, wow, I have a job, I have income, I have family, I have friends. So now I'm listing all of those things. We're hacking the brain. And my brain now, instead of going, my life sucks, my life is terrible, mm-hmm. now I'm starting to think, you know, I'm so blessed. And now what happens? It draws in other people, because that negative attacking individual, and it's going to hurt their mental health, they're going to repel other people. They're going to repel relationship. You know, the world gets bigger and better. Mm. It's something that I learned, right? So here's attachment. So when I'm able to live this way, it draws other people and we're connected. It's a great way to solve loneliness. How can I find somebody else who looks lonely? They teach it to little kids at school with something called friendship benches.
Yes.
Yeah. And they have it on the playground. They have it in the cafeteria. And a friendship bench is, and it says on it, if you're lonely, if you need a friend, sit on the bench. And somebody who's basically trained in what we'd call peer support sits there. And now all of a sudden, they both have a buddy. They're not in life alone. All right. So here's attachment. Watch this. This is divide. This is politics. Well, I'm right. No, I'm right. No, I'm right. No, I'm right. They're just going to argue.
Right.
And prove that both of them like to argue. Arguing doesn't prove who's right. Arguing proves who likes to argue. And this divides. And so I want to help people attach. And the more I'm able to change my mindset and start to change some things in my behavior, now all of a sudden I'm on a healthier path. It's going to draw other people on a healthier path. And we're able to make our, hopefully, our world a little bit healthier place.
I love that. Yeah.
I heard you once say, if you're not moving forward, you're sliding backwards.
Yeah.
So let's say someone starts moving forward. You know, happens a lot in January, right? I'm going to do this, sure. this, that. And then 2 weeks later, a lot of people slide backwards. What are some ways to prevent that?
I'm so glad you said that, Gabe, because you may have seen I brought with me a Slinky.
That Slinky, is truly Slinky. A Slinky.
Everybody loves a Slinky. This is the original. And when you start to think of, the reason I use this, it's exactly that, right? So when I think about change, change is an up or down. There is no stay still. It's a spiral. So you're either moving up with something called self-discipline, or if you're doing nothing, I'm just going to sit on the couch and binge Netflix with my covers pulled up to my chin. Okay, that's called self-destruction. It's slow self-destruction, because if you just say, I'm just going to sit here on the couch is not your friend. Sitting in front of a screen will not give you a powerful life. Life is constantly moving up or down, and it takes effort to move up the spiral. Will life knock you down? 100%. What happens? You're going to take a breath, nostril breath. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to think, okay, I'm going to get up. I'm going to try this again. What if you feel really scared? That's why you have friends. You know, sometimes to be able to say, who can I text? Who can I reach out to? Who haven't I heard from in a while? I mean, Gabe, the research is terrifying. The most likely group that will kill themselves with suicide are men. The most likely group that feel alone, isolated, detached in the United States are men. You know, it's been said that we have a male friendship crisis.
Yeah.
In 1990, the average guy had 6 friends he could call if he had a flat tire.
And how many men feel okay to share your emotions because of what we've been taught, that it's not okay to share your emotions? But everybody, men, women, we have emotions.
Right. Somebody, I heard somebody once when they said, what's the dumbest thing you ever heard? And he said, the dumbest thing I ever heard was that boys are not supposed to cry.
Mm, so true.
And so I thought, true. That's true.
Yeah.
Because to spiral out of something, it's knowing I need to spiral out and knowing who can I call. Because you can't get out of a big hole by yourself. You can get out of it, but you're going to need somebody. And sometimes that's why to talk to a professional. You know, I believe in something called peer support, because peer support is life support. Yeah. And peer support is to be able to have someone in my life. Right now, we know that about 15% of guys don't have one single friend, even the married ones. When you think about some of the famous celebrities that killed themselves with suicide, even in the last few months, and some of them had beautiful families and beautiful homes and beautiful jobs, but they didn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And so being able to know, all right, I'm going to reach out. I'm going to build some supports, peer support. And then to be able to know, if I don't have friends, then that's when we call a professional. That's when we call a professional counselor, you know, a social worker. That's when we reach out to someone. For me and for a lot of people, they went to 12-step groups. Or maybe they went to a program at their church. And being able to know, if somebody says, well, I'm still spiraling down. It's still not working. Great. We've got psychologists, psychiatrists. We've got treatment centers, residential treatment centers. There are places that people can go and live. You don't have to keep spiraling down until your life doesn't matter. But listen, you do have to find your voice and make a choice.
Yep.
finding my voice is saying, you know what? My life matters. And maybe I grew up in a home where people said, you don't matter. I mean, I grew up in a home where I was told every day, special birth, special purpose. Special birth, special purpose. I love my parents. I'll take them to Disney this weekend for lunch for my mom's birthday. And I just love being around my parents because I grew up in a home where we were always loved, told you're wanted. And to me, that was automatic. What shocked me is when I got into college and people would say, my dad never one time told me he loved me. It's like, you're making that up. And it was shocking to me that people's parents weren't their heroes, their cheerleaders. I mean, I knew I wanted to be a psychologist on the radio, but my parents took me to internships. They took me to places to practice, to study broadcasting. Before I could drive, they were taking me to places to volunteer at WDBO, way down by Orlando, Orlando's first radio station. I would sit in the back and type envelopes before I could drive a car because I wanted to be in broadcasting to help people in my hometown. Mm-hmm. But never would have happened if I hadn't had incredible heroes, incredible parents who didn't go to counseling because it really wasn't popular then, certainly not for people that had no resources without education. But they got it on broadcasting.
And if you don't have that, and you know, I think what you're saying too is there's other avenues. If you didn't have parents that were loving and caring, and you know, hope really stems a lot of times from a struggle and being able to share your story and be happy with who you are sharing that story.
Yeah, there's an old rock and roll song that says you're as sane as your secrets. And that's why if somebody says, well, I don't have money, I don't have resources, the library's free and has access, you know, doorways for the greatest tools in the world. And when you think about here are books that are available for free at the library of the greatest wisdom of the greatest thinkers, why wouldn't you go there all the time?
Access to the best psychologists, the best addictions treatment specialists. Yeah. Yeah.
And absolutely. The internet now, there's so many resources and podcasts and there's so much information out there now.
And right.
Our hospitals too. We're available 24/7. You can walk into any of our hospitals if you're feeling at a point where I need help. I need it right now.
Right.
I don't have anyone.
Voice, choice. The voice is to say, I need help. I've been there. Been there bunches of times. And then choice. And the choice is to say, I'm going to call a hotline, you know, 988 suicide hotline. That number has spiked in popularity because people said, oh, that's easy to remember. I'm going to call and talk to someone who cares. I don't have to face this alone. I find my voice because I matter. I make a choice to make a phone call, to visit a hospital, and to be able to say, my life matters. I want to get better. Mm-hmm. I want to spiral up.
Yes.
And live the life I was designed to live.
I love that.
And then not only does that change count for yourself, but also future generations, right? All the people
trickles
around
down.
You.
Yeah, and, that's so true.
Yeah, and it affects your kind of radius.
And that's the exciting thing about the work we do, Gabe, because when you think about when somebody says, I'm going to spiral out, I'm going to be the healthy person in my family tree. You know, in my family tree, they didn't model health, so I'm going to be the one who rewrites history. And it's exciting because you can rewrite history for generations. You can change somebody 100 years from now that'll be born after you're gone, whose life is better because you said, no more. We're not going to have one more holiday ruined with substances. We're not going to have one more holiday ruined with abuse. It stops here. It stops now because I found my voice. I made a choice and I found some people that would come alongside to help.
I love that. Well, Dwight and Gabe, thank you so much. We talked a little bit about courage. We talked about steps, small steps that we can take.
Small, simple steps.
Small breaths. And, you know, if you are at a point where you really need help and you need it now and you might be feeling like you're harming yourself or suicidal, you can reach any of our hospitals. We have Central Florida Behavioral, Palm Point Behavioral, University Behavioral, and then also La Amistad Peer Support. We talked a little bit about that. That's a wonderful thing. Dwight has a wonderful practice here in Central Florida, Dwight Bain. He's a professional counselor if you want to reach out to him as well. Thank you, guys, for this amazing conversation. Okay, we're going to do something really weird, though. Can we end with a Yahoo at the count of three? Yeah?
Yeah.
Cheesy? Yeah? Let's do it.
Let's do
one,
it.
All right. Two, three.
Yahoo! Yahoo! Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Mind Matters.